Hello, and welcome back to another insightful episode of Creatives Chat. I'm Rusty.
I'm Peter.
And Peter, tell everyone, who do we have on our show today?
Ooh, Rusty, I'm excited. Our guest is a chef, an artist, a singer, and an advocate for mental health. We're bringing on Lauren today.
Well, everybody, let's get cooking.
Streaming from Retro Earth Studio and brought to you by
WeAreHistorically.com, Conscious Human Apparel, and
Learn to Play Jazz Piano Like a Pro by a Pro with Jazz Piano Pro Essentials at jazzpianopro.com.
Everybody, meet Lauren.
And Lauren, thank you so much for coming on Creatives Chat. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I've had a very productive day, and now I'm just kind of hanging out.
That's awesome. Well, let's just get right into the nitty-gritty with this. What's the chef's experience been like in this kind of era of the coronavirus? Like pre, post, all in between?
Oh my God. I don't know why I didn't think this was going to come up. It's been crazy. I think I can, for everybody in the industry, when I say it's been, none of us ever saw this coming. Okay. And a lot of us lost our jobs, couldn't find any more work because there was no work. And then it was just, the only people that really were able to keep their jobs were people that were at upper echelons of companies. Yeah. So it was very, very tough for if you hadn't already made it to that level, which is very hard to do. So I think a lot of us kind of got a lot of sore spots from it. You know, with the way that the industry is sort of ramping back up now, it's a little different. But a lot of people, I got to say, a lot of people are really just burnt out on the industry in general because it's all of this work for a minimal amount of money. Yeah. And it's a very heartfelt industry. Like a lot of people who are in my line of work do it because they really want to do it, not because of the money, but there's that creative aspect of it that's so important. And when you're throwing everything in a box and shoving it out the door for it to go, it takes all of the passion away from the industry. So it's been really, really tough for people who did stay in. It's been tough for people who weren't able to stay in. It's been tough for everyone all around, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, and not to mention, oh, sorry.
All you. Keep it rolling.
Well, not to mention, you know, the way that things have kind of panned out, it's changed the shape of the industry forever. So if you now don't offer to go and dine in service, or you, or if you're following guidelines, or if you're not following guidelines, there's so much taken away at this point. It's so crazy.
So right there, though, the creative aspect of culinary arts and really being able to express yourself and just really just let it loose in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Have you been able to transition that like into your home life more, like into your personal life? Do you feel like there's been a switch where it's just like those that have stepped away kind of ball out for themselves?
Oh man. My personal life over the last year, I can speak for the industry as a whole, but myself personally has been quite the journey. I was a pastry sous chef at the beginning of the pandemic. I had put in my 2 weeks as a pastry sous chef to go to the Ethan Stoll company so that I could train into a sous chef position there.
Okay.
And then the day, my last day of work at the first place, the next day was going to be my first day at work at the next place. And that was when they made the announcement and I got laid off that day.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then I, you know, I I drove across the country for another job, and wow, that didn't work out. And then I drove back to Colorado, and you know, it's just been a lot. And then myself personally, my dad actually died from COVID, unfortunately. Mm. So that's been a big impact over the last year. But you know, I will say I think this year has kind of tested my resilience quite a bit. And I think I've been able to truck through a lot more than I thought I would.
Well, right there, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I really wanted to bring you on and highlight your experiences on Creatives Chat, because, you know, seeing, you know, just the IG page, you know, still throughout this process of, you know, of transition, of loss, of healing, and just kind of the journey in between, it's still one of those things where when you see someone that's going through stuff, like, you know, they're going through stuff, you don't know them, but you're just like, oh wow, like, heart goes out to you. And you see them just having these experiences to create something that not only looks delicious, but it like brings family together. And it's like, and you can see satisfaction on like their faces and things. Like, how do you feel like the kind of kitchen environment and culture kind of prepared you for like this tumultuous period of life?
God, I've said this so many times, my life changed when I got in the industry, because I'm sure most of the people in the industry will agree with me, a lot of us are just messed up. A lot of us have been through a lot of the same things. We understand a lot of the same things about each other. You know, we can get in a fight and go have a beer after. There's a very strong sense of community in the kitchen. And if it weren't for my brothers and my sisters and all of the people that I've, you know, gotten into the industry with supporting me through this, there's no way that I would have been able to do it. Not at all. Wow. So my kitchen bond has prepared me for the worst, I would say.
See, that's something that's really cool though. I mean, it's interesting, you usually don't hear people highlight their industry, but like, it attracts a lot of messed up people. But I guess that's just the kind of,
well, we are, you know, I like to say that we're all pirates. Because all we do is cuss and drink and smoke and cook.
The modern day pirates.
Everybody that I work with is amazing, wonderful people. They've all just been absolutely wonderful. And you know, my parents have actually been incredibly supportive as well. Because I was actually adopted when I was a kid, so my adopted family has been very supportive through all of this as well. So,
wow, and that's one of those things right there. It just goes to highlight when you have someone that has such a varied experience and has been exposed to a lot of stuff, I feel like they can tap in extra deep into those kind of creative powers, you know, in the flow and the now, or drawn to it in terms of expression.
Yeah, I would say so. Myself personally, I don't know how far you've dived into my Instagram, but I advocate for mental health awareness a lot. I think it's so incredibly important. I'm very passionate about it because, you know, I myself am an abuse survivor. So I do bring that up quite a bit. But part of some of my experience in life, because I was such a loner when I was a child, I often spent a lot of my time doing creative things because it was a very strong outlet for me. And I think that's why a lot of people who, again, have a lot of trauma end up in the industry, because we all have those experiences where we need that outlet, and you find that creativity and you just stick with it.
Ooh. Ooh. Well, what brought you into the studying of cooking?
That was my go-to when I was a kid. When my parents were asleep, I would sneak up into the kitchen and just cook and just mess with stuff, because I, again, child of abuse, I had always been told that I was not intelligent, that I was not talented, that I could not do these things. And my stepmom was actually an incredible cook, just one of the most incredible cooks that you've ever seen. She could go to a restaurant and have a plate of food for the first time and be able to cook it immediately. Wow. Yeah. So I had actually expressed that interest really early on, and that was the response that I was given. So I ended up sort of finding it all on my own. And so that, I mean, that was really the only way that I could kind of cope with my situation.
Yeah. That's interesting. And well, I guess, was there a moment when you knew like, oh, this is just, this is my thing. Like as a kid, is it a dish? Is it anything that kind of brings that nostalgic knowing?
You know, actually, the moment that I figured that out was when I was working at Microsoft, because wow. I had been in the tech industry for a while. I stayed in the tech industry for a good long while. I worked for the user research team. I was great at my job. I was getting paid really good money, but I would go home and cook all night long because I was miserable. Wow. And I finally decided, you know, if this is something that I love this much, why am I wasting all of my time in a job that I hate? So I packed everything up, put in my 2 weeks, and started culinary school, and then started three more culinary jobs right at the same time. And I just wanted to soak up as much knowledge as I could, because the thing about the industry is that everybody who gets in usually starts a lot earlier. So I was already way behind in the game. I didn't start getting in until I was 24. And all these people that are younger than me are already way ahead of me in years and knowledge and experience. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to school full time. I'm going to work at this restaurant job. And I'm going to work for the Seahawks because I had an internship with the Seahawks. And I would literally, my day would start at 4 a.m. and my day would end at midnight because I was doing it all. And I pushed myself really, really hard to learn everything that I could.
What kept you going through it? Like what kept you in that state of just like pushing through that? Cause that's hellish hours to say the least.
God, you know, honestly, I may cry a little bit, but I have to bring up my dad because my dad meant so much to me, and it was part of the drive that I had. My dad suffered from Alzheimer's and dementia. And so he was always sort of worried about how I was going to turn out because I had such a negative experience when I was a kid. He was really the only person that was there for me. Mm-hmm. And, he was always sort of worried about me finding my place. And so when I finally got involved in the industry and, you know, started getting really passionate about it, he was out of this world excited. And but his dementia and his Alzheimer's kept consistently getting worse. So, you know, I just sort of promised myself that I would get to a level that I was really proud of before he either forgot who I was or passed on, because I knew my time with him was very limited. He was a much older man. My dad was actually 77 last year when he passed. So if that gives you any idea, I mean, he was like 47 when he had me. So, yeah. You know, it just really meant a lot to me to do something meaningful with my life. So when he was still going to be around to see it.
Yeah. That's powerful. That's powerful.
Yeah. He was my main driving force for wanting to get ahead. And it's actually crazy because after he passed, my whole perspective on my career has changed in a billion different ways. So, you know, it's crazy how life can kind of take you on those journeys, but you know, since he's passed, my purpose has changed and like my drive has redirected itself and I think different things now. And it's kind of weird when that's your driving factor and that's taken away.
No. Well, how's been the transition? What is this investment kind of transition of just thought of direction? How's it pivoted? Where are things going now?
God, I have really tried to get my shit together. That's how. I have kind of just taken some time to really think about what it is that I want, what it is that my end game is going to be. And for so long, it was always just like, I have to make money. I have to be, you know, I have to be a chef. I have to get up there and like do my best and blah, blah, blah. But my focus has shifted from being a successful chef to being happy. So a lot of the time that I've spent kind of in mourning, I've thought about like what it is that I really want. And I still want to be a chef. Cooking makes me happy. It's something I'm incredibly passionate about, but I don't know that I want all of that pressure of the restaurant industry anymore. Like I said, the industry's changed so much anyway. So it's definitely not the way that it was before. But I think I would just be happy having a few cows and goats on a farm and making some cheese. So, I've diversified my investment portfolio. I've switched up my saving strategy to buy land. I'm putting my feelers out in more directions and really just training myself on that knowledge. So
love it. Love the homesteading vibe.
I think life is a little different place when you sort of accept just wanting to be happy instead of pushing a bunch of other stuff.
And that right there is a special avenue of exploration, because it's really the courageous path to go against the grain of what everyone's been conditioned and taught, that it's always almost kind of causes, like, it induces panic in others when you talk to them about these types of transitions, where you're like, oh yeah, I'm okay walking away from these things and doing my own thing. And they're like, wait, what? Why? Oh my gosh, it's this. And I think that's how you can always tell where someone's
I lost friends over it, over changing my mind about the things that I am interested in or the things that I want. And I just said, you know what? Go on, do your thing.
That's so wild. Well, what is it you think about someone else going against really the own perception and creation they have in their head? When you do something that's counter that, why is it that people react so tepid and or even hostile? You know, there's a lot of different ways people respond.
I've had these conversations with my mom, who is, by the way, my best friend. But her and I have had these conversations over the last couple of weeks. Myself personally, I don't really care what other people do. You know, yeah, if you are my friend, I'm going to support you no matter what. I may not always agree with the things that you do, and I'll tell you, because I'm a very open, honest person about those things. If I think you're being an idiot, I will tell you. But that doesn't have any effect on whether or not I think you're a good person. Now, if you did something deliberately malintended, so if you cheated on your wife, I probably would lose quite a bit of respect for you. But if you're just making life decisions, you know, who am I to fault you for your journey? I feel like you should. Life throws so much crap at every individual all the time, consistently. If you have to make decisions to pivot accordingly and put yourself in the path that you want to be on, then more power to you. Make the choices. Do your thing.
Mm. What in the world nowadays makes us do the opposite, though? I feel like there's so many people nowadays, and then that's the double-edged sword of the coronavirus, is that it's kind of brought people to either this avenue where they're going to continue to go down it, or they really chose this time to really question, like, is this the direction I want to go with it? You know, what does it take to look within in terms of your own experience and transform it into something more of an opportunity versus just...
Well, I will say, one of my mentors had actually given me quite a bit of great advice before I reached where I am now. He had said, you know, happiness comes from within. Yeah. So I think all of that is based on a personal experience for people. I think if you're in the right headspace, those are the thoughts you're going to have. If you're not in the right headspace, if you're not ready for growth and change, you know, maybe that's not what you're ready to do at that point. And I think every individual, you know, makes their decisions accordingly. And some people grow from different experiences and some people stay stagnant. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with either side. I think it's just a matter of personal journey.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I mean, again, we know what we know. And if you're not at a point of, you know, ripening, yeah, then it doesn't really matter yet.
If you're not at a spiritual point where you're ready to grow into another facet of your life, then that's not really your fault. And your circumstances changing in a particular way can push you or can drive you away from different thoughts. So I don't really think anybody's at fault in that, you know?
Yeah.
It's great that it's motivated so many people to like get up and like do something powerful with their lives and make them happy. But I think the people who are still ready to just do what they were doing before and ready to get back to normal, I think those are still great people. I mean, yeah, fuck, maybe they're just still happy. Maybe they were already happy.
Yeah. I mean, again, everyone's at their own point of knowing and experience and really what tickles their fancy, if you want to say anything like that. But
yeah.
It goes into the opportunity where for yourself in this time of transition, has the kind of coronavirus environment really supported you in the sense of like the looking you were looking to do in terms of like internal development, self-empowering, whatever we want to call it?
If COVID hadn't happened, I don't think I would have developed as much as I did. No. I think I would have kind of continued to push the direction that I was going. And you know, I think unfortunately it might have bit me in the butt sooner, because it has now. I actually have had to take about a month and a half off of work because I had major surgery. Because the industry is so intensive on the body, you know, I worked myself into an ulcer and a hernia and a ruptured ovarian, and like it's been, I mean, the industry is very, very hard on the body, and I would have continued to push my body in that way without coronavirus, and I probably would have broke down sooner.
Wow. That's intense. Yeah. Just to think in terms of like the hustle and the grind that is the kitchen life. It also does make sense why everyone goes so deep though in the kitchen that I know that work in the kitchens that like are of the culinary arts, is because they're going through such an intense, like almost forced flow. Like you have to be in like the kind of moment, there is no time to go through the motions and just kind of space out, you know, you're always very aware. Yeah. So like you can get very tapped in. So I could easily see the body just going beyond its limits just because you're so like laser focused in the kitchen.
Well, yeah. I mean, and it's not even just the fact that it is laser focused. It's laser focused for such a large amount of time. So I mean, up until about a month ago when my body broke down, I was, you know, waking up for work at 9 a.m., driving an hour, you know, trying to get to my work by 10 or 11, and I wouldn't leave till midnight, 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I mean, and that's just if you're like a chef or a sous chef. That's not necessarily how it is if you're a cook, because cooks, you can't get overtime. But I will say, but you would be amazed. And I did this many, many, many times myself, but the people who are truly passionate about the kitchen do it all the time, but you know, they'll come in, they'll work off the clock. If they know they have a lot to do that day, they'll come in and they'll do it without being paid for it. And I've done that many, many times. Mm. I don't recommend it, but you know, there comes a point where you say, okay, do I want my entire day to be hell if I come in on time? Or do I come in a little early, get everything I need to be done, and then service runs smoothly? So we all make those choices for ourselves.
Yeah. Ooh.
It sucks, but if you want to earn respect in the industry, a lot of people end up working off the clock. It's not legal.
Interesting.
It's not legal. It's not recommended, but we all work off the clock, and chefs get driven into the ground quicker than you would imagine. Because we're all on salary. And there's an expectation that we'll show up and work a 16, 17, 18 hour day.
That's wild. How do you decompress? Like, how did you used to de-stress and relax when you were working the line, when you were, you know, sous chefing it up? In the kitchen life, I guess. What's the
alcohol?
Easiest way? Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of kitchens have what they call shift drink.
Okay.
Where we'll all just grab a drink from the bar that we work at. And while we're getting everything cleaned up at the end of the night, we'll just have a quick drink together. And then if we feel like drinking, we'll go have a slice of pizza and a beer next door or something. And then we'll all go home.
Yeah. Straightforward. But see, it's those times where it's almost like after war.
We're pirates. Right?
Well, I guess that's the cool thing to kind of tap into is that you're working with so many creative people. You're working with all these, you know, seasoned souls, as you could call it. How has like your own perspective changed and your own kind of exploration of self transformed just like through the conversations and the community that you've like been a part of for so long?
That one's a loaded question, actually.
Pretty loaded, right?
That's a loaded question.
All we do here.
You know, I've gained a little bit from each person that I've worked for. If a chef thinks that you're worth it, they will invest in you. And I've been very fortunate enough to have a lot of the chefs that I've worked for really get invested in my journey and want to see me succeed and more than happy to like network me out to other people and help me like move in the direction I want to go. Like a good example is my very first mentor, Ellie. She taught me a lot about being humble. And I think, you know, I've touched on this before, but I will say going into it, I had a lot more of this sort of, there was a bit of an arrogance there, right? So, you know, she brought me down to this level that was like, you know, very humble and gracious for the experience. Mm-hmm. And my other mentor, Michael, you know, he was an incredible part of my personal development and just, you know, always there for advice, always like kind of pushing me in the direction of like, are you sure that's the best idea? Another one of my mentors, Aris, was my high octane, get your butt in gear, are you fucking kidding me, chef.
You're Gordon Ramsay.
So, you know, when I first got into the industry, I felt like I kind of had like a lack of direction. I was just sort of like, I am still this person. I am still a very happy-go-lucky person. But I feel like I was bordering on naive a little bit. And not only did the restaurant industry give me like a very hard dose of reality, but it also, you know, it taught me a lot about, you know, the world around me. You know, I've come to know much more about my food and where it comes from and what's sustainable and what's good for for humanity. Really. I mean, I've become a much more involved person, a much more caring person, I would say. Yeah. I will say if I could punch my past, I would. Because I used to be very selfish and I'm very impulsive. But I've sort of found in my time in the industry, you know, that there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's always refreshing when you hear someone kind of peel back the layers to an experience like that and come to this deep respect and kind of like reverence, really just overall gratitude for just like the process of like, where does our food come from? What are we putting into our bodies? How are we preparing it in the most optimal way? And it's something that's so overlooked, especially with in America, you know, in terms of how most people you know, circumstance or just upbringing, how they choose to eat, you know? So yeah. Just in terms of seeing the, I would say like the farm to the kitchen process, the table, how has that kind of changed? And what are some of the things that you're kind of like looking for in the, in your future homesteading to dabble in?
Because I now have the knowledge that I have, because I've worked in the industry, I've become a lot more hyper-focused on sustainability. Mm-hmm. So for instance, I get really annoyed when people eat avocados. I get very annoyed with it because they're so horrible for the environment. They take a ton of water to grow. They are, the countries that can grow them are on water rations that are being extorted by the cartel. Like, it's, the avocado is a horrible food to be consuming, and it's over consumed. True. You know, it's yeah. ravaging the earth. So, you know, I've come to a point where I'm very open about those opinions and almost borderline shame other chefs for using those ingredients. Because, you know, we're all part of the same system. And if we yeah. make it and people buy it, we're the ones contributing to the continuation of that cycle. So,
yeah.
you know, we have just as much control as the consumer does when we make the decision to put things on a menu. We're putting ourselves behind that product.
Yeah. I mean, again, it comes back to that just statement of voting with your dollar.
In my future, huh?
That just comes back to that voting with your dollar in terms of really trying to build the world you're looking to create.
When you spend money at a restaurant, the food that you're buying comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, if the restaurant that you're eating at is local and they care about local farms and they care about their impact on the community, not only are you getting better, fresher food that has a higher quality because it's locally grown and organic, but you're also supporting a multitude of local businesses.
Yeah, 100%.
But when you choose to buy products that are not only bad for the earth, but also, you know, incredibly expensive because they are imported, your product has to be frozen. It's not quite as fresh. There's so many different aspects to that that are just, why would you even bother? You know?
Oh yeah.
But we as, you know, as the human race have become so conditioned to instant gratification. Yeah. So a perfect example that I like to use is Native American culture. So Native American culture, each Native culture in each different part of America had their own food system. They had their own dietary needs because as a human being, your body adjusts its needs based on your environment.
Yeah.
So back when there was no shipping tangerines from Florida to New York, you know, your body releases different cravings based on your needs. So when you crave sugar, when you crave something sweet, typically you need to be adding fruit into your diet.
Yeah.
You can't just go down to Florida and grab yourself an orange. You need to find something in New York that'll help you. So, you know, their body is adjusted to their needs.
Yeah.
But then with all of these different things kind of being thrown at us with this hyper fixation on instant gratification, not only are we not doing our bodies right based on the environments that we're in, but we're also not doing the rest of the planet right.
Yeah. Well, it comes back to that point too, where, you know, there's that deeper knowing of, they always say you are what you eat, but it comes back to a deeper understanding when, you know, because my experience in terms of like the science factory farming area would be more so in antibiotics and different medication development. Because I worked at Big Pharma, and I remember working with a few clients who worked with food industry. And it's really alarming to see that we've gotten to a point where most people are so disconnected from that farm to the table, like farm to the kitchen type of upbringing, type of understanding and relation with food, that they really don't care what they're putting into their body. And I think most people don't even really eat food anymore. They eat products. And there's a huge distinction with that one.
I will agree with that, but I will say the industry itself has been pushing in this direction for a while now. And I've been lucky to be at the forefront of it, where I've had incredible mentors who are also passionate about the environment, who want to see the earth become a better place. And it's moving in the right direction, but more people need to get on board in order for it to go the way it needs to go. So, like, you know, 100%. Everybody needs to encourage that local experience. And there's some places that you just can't do that.
And see, that's the kind of double, that's like the period of like the pandemic and everything has caused a lot of opportunity to grow. But that's where I feel like also some places, like especially what California, theirs was more than like 65%. Up here, it was pretty high too. Of just small businesses that are now just like permanently out of business. And that's the thing that I think is going to have to be, it's going to have to be addressed in these coming months. And like, as people start to really come back out and emerge from the caves that were their homesteads, but it's to this realization that there's going to be a new wave of creative force. I feel like, you know, anytime there's always one exit, there's another entrance. And this is where I feel like there's going to be a lot of really cool projects coming out. When people did have this time to kind of take a break, to really kind of narrow what they wanted to do with their life, these kind of moments of transformation to really heal and grow. So excited yet curious in your thoughts of that.
My biggest concerns with the way that the industry has shifted, one are race related, because a significant amount of the numbers of restaurants that have closed, anywhere from 65 to 75% of that chunk of restaurants and local businesses that have closed are all Asian run businesses. And so the pandemic created this anti-Asian hate, and it's very, very unfortunate to see. So I'm sort of hoping that the industry moves in a much more welcoming direction towards not just Asian Americans, but also other people of color. But you know, the industry is tough. Like it's tough. And, you know, we're in the unfortunate circumstance of being at the hands of the people that we feed. So and unfortunately, if your market is racist, that's kind of a hard situation to be in, you know? And like, that's why so many people were pushing for all this money to go to Black owned businesses, to Asian owned businesses, because they were the ones who were suffering the most.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that we move in the right direction. I am hoping that more companies adopt policies that reflect that. But I am also pretty concerned with the fact that all that's really left right now is processed food.
Right. It's just like the bigger industries that can kind of take the punch, but all the kind of small niche lunch only, you know, like work crowd, especially downtown, like they didn't have the heat to sustain and really continue on. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest voids that, I mean, we're in a weird time of transformation. Like the whole work at home thing is even more pushed now. I feel like there's going to be a lot more companies kind of drifting towards like the 3-day work week or 4-day work week, 3-day weekend. But it's, yeah, I mean, hey, you never know. It's just going to be interesting just to see how that changes, like, the food industry itself.
The thing
you
is,
mentioned it earlier,
is
like, that taking the other industries,
the other industries will shift into those changes seamlessly if that's the direction that they're going. But the restaurant industry, though it will change in many other ways, we're still going to be kicking butt every day. You know, with the people that work in this industry are tough cookies. So we're still going to be workhorses.
So you kind of loosely mentioned it. When it comes to cooking a meal for someone in the restaurant versus cooking something for takeout, how does that experience change as the creator of the meal?
There's not a lot of soul.
Mm.
You get the feeling of cooking it still. You know, you get to be a part of putting that into a plate. It's just, everything is homogenous now. You know, you're putting it in a box. It's all homogenous. It shifts around in the box on the way to that person's house. It's not plated. It's not something that you can look at and be proud of.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, because it's just in a box with a lid on it.
That's where I'm kind of curious, like, what's been some of the coolest experiences that you've had kind of experimenting with this kind of new age tech, new techniques, and like.
One of the coolest things that I saw was the vegan egg.
Oh, the Just Egg? Is
that no. So they take, confit tomatoes.
Yeah.
And they emulsify the tomatoes with the oil that they confit it in. Mm. And they spherify it, and it tastes just like an egg yolk. Just like an egg yolk.
What?
Vegan egg.
That's so awesome. See, these are the
I was mesmerized by it. I was like, but it looks the same. It has the same texture. It has the same color. It tastes the same. Like.
So how is
veganism has changed the industry. I know people want to believe that it hasn't, but it's pushed people to be more creative with their food. So
I was going to say, like, what's been some of those kind of healthy, I don't know, just like avenues of your own cooking exploration that you've taken, things that you probably wouldn't have been exposed to.
I'm the wrong person to ask.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, you got the butcher job right now.
My food is rich. I love using tons and tons of butter and fat and salt and like cream. I am also, you know, big into baking too. So it's all the sweets. I'm not the girl to ask about healthy food. I try to keep myself healthy. I try to like only put in good food in my body. But for the most part, I'm a sucker for comfort food. I really am.
So, okay. So this is a great avenue for the cuisine question. What has been the most applied cuisine that you've learned that you kind of incorporate into day-to-day life?
Breakfast food.
Yeah.
When you work brunch and you get a feel for brunch service and then you end up, you know, taking care of yourself, because we work long, crazy, hard hours. In my personal life, a lot of my cooking is breakfast. Breakfast or baking. So, I love throwing down on breakfast, and that's most of what I end up applying in my day-to-day life. But as far as the cuisine that I've spent the most time in, that's definitely Italian.
Ooh. So pasta is really master the doughs.
Do you count baking as a cuisine? That is the question.
I would definitely consider it as its own identification. Needs its own category.
Well, then definitely baking, because I've been baking since I was 12. So, yes.
So how'd that evolution start? Like, how'd you get into baking? When did you first start really applying that culinary wise? I'm curious about the bake journey. Cause I think I'm a year and some months into bread making. So it's like sourdough starter, making sourdough loaves, using the discard to make pasta. Like, yeah.
I may catch a little bit of heat for this, but Paula Deen. Yeah. I made her pumpkin cheesecake recipe. It was the first thing I ever made. And it was my favorite thing I ever did. And the rest is history.
Just one dish. Well, that's the coolest thing to think about, in the sense of, what if you never made that? What if it was something else that didn't taste as good? Do you think you would have been as like, yeah, let's bake?
I don't know. My biological mom was also a baker too. So I felt like there was a little bit of inspiration from her there, but I didn't spend a lot of my life with her. So, I mean, I'm not really sure if I would have still gone down the same path.
Interesting. Well, I mean, you never know. Doesn't really matter. We're here. We're at this point.
I'd still be at Microsoft, I guess. I don't know.
Well, what's some of the coolest things that you're baking now? Because I saw the one, like, triple proof and pick where you just, like, hand in the dough, which is favorite part when things are proofing.
You know, I have been obsessed with cinnamon rolls lately. I can't stop making them and finding different ways to make them. And my family loves them. I love making them for them because they're always really happy about it. I've been on a cinnamon roll kick for months now.
So this is what I want to pick your brain on.
That's the only thing that I'll bake for months. That's
just
it.
Just so you
that's,
master that's it, though. You'll just get it done until you find like that recipe. You're like, okay, I'm content moving forward with this.
You know, I will say that I do kind of push myself to make it perfect.
Why not? Especially for the cinnamon roll.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to have 800 calories, you might as well do it well.
So what's some cinnamon roll hot tips and tricks that you have for the listeners?
It's all in the proof. It's all in taking the time to really do it right. The way that I've done it in the past, there's always been like a time crunch, but my favorite way to execute it is by really taking the time to do it right. And, you know, let the dough sit overnight, make sure it's all nice and warm in there and make sure there's moisture and make like, you have to kind of create your own conditions, especially in Colorado. You have to create your own conditions and, you know, you have to kind of baby it a little bit at first, but you know, it's important to really let it take the time to fluff out.
Yeah.
That's my best advice.
That's so wild. So what is the best seasoning or like cinnamon filling to dough ratio? What's been the experiments? You know, you've had to have dabbled.
Oh, man. You know, I used to be a big proponent of fluffing out the butter until it was like fluffy with just brown sugar and cinnamon. And that was it. I was like classic all the way. I don't want to mess with a good thing. I want it to be perfect. This is it. This is all I need. But if you throw cardamom and ginger in there, prepare to have your mind blown, because that is incredible.
See, this is why I love talking with someone who has, you know, their specialty in their own field, is because you start to learn that to take things beyond that kind of like amateur level into like the pro class, as we could call it in the sense, is there's so many more like minute techniques. Like there's so much refinement of how you're cooking. It gets a lot more into like the chemistry of it, into the actual science of how you're preparing something. So it's like, I just love to see it in action.
Yeah. I think the thing that interests me most about the baking is how cool the science is with some of the stuff that I get to play with it. Yeah. And you know, for me, it's just a lot of fun. I will agree that there is quite a bit of knowledge that goes into it sometimes that I'm not aware that everybody doesn't know.
Well, it's the things we take for granted when it looks cool and you have a giant thing that's in a sphere and it's, you crack it or melt it with some chocolate, then, you know, you have another present underneath. Yeah. Like people don't realize all the techniques and equipment that goes into baking it.
It's a lot more finesse than you think it would be.
So when it comes to that, in terms of learning, you know, these different skills, the patience that it takes for some of these different dishes, you know, how has just kind of being the chef and how's that life really impacted you and your perspective of just life and yourself and,
you know, the experience? I will say the industry is not what taught me patience.
Oh, okay.
Actually, it's kind of surprising that it didn't, but I actually... I'm a very impatient person in general. And I think actually the industry made me a little bit worse because I'm a very right here, right now kind of person. Things have to get done and we don't have time. My niece actually taught me a lot about being patient. You kind of have to be patient when there's a 4-year-old. So she definitely made me who I am, made me a better person. So
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, then what have been some of the bigger takeaways in terms of life lessons from the kitchen and just like the industry itself? What have been some of the big ones that have really, you know, those nuggets of wisdom that just never went away?
The nuggets of wisdom that never went away. It's so hard because I've had so many different mentors. If I had one that I could just have pulled from, it wouldn't be hard.
Well, I guess.
But I've had so many.
Well, let's narrow it down then. So in these moments of transformation and adversity and just so many different things happening, what have been some of those lessons that have just really kind of like echoed through this past year?
Happiness comes from within. Yes. Happiness comes from within. That also, it is what it is. All of the Michael Johnsonisms that I've picked up. He was my mentor when I worked for the Seahawks. He's an incredible chef. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. And he was one of those old wisdom kind of guys. So, and he still is, you know, if I ever have questions, I can always hit him up and just talk to him. So I will say that he has made me a much more peaceful person.
Peace amidst the chaos of the kitchen. How does that tend to be in, you know, was there ever a point where you just kind of felt like, oh, wow, this is when you just like observed yourself in the flow and were just like, I don't know, just enamored or in this intimate moment of just being? Anything ever stand out? Those spiritual, well, because I consider like that those are spiritual experiences that people have, you know. So do tell.
It's actually the first night that I ever worked on the hot side. Because when you start in a kitchen, they always start you on like salads and desserts. Like you're going to be the salad bitch for a while before you can earn the chops to go work saute. You got to earn your place on the line.
Yeah.
So I would watch when I was the way that Cantonetta, the restaurant that I worked at, first restaurant I worked at was set up. Whoever was the salad bitch was kind of tucked in this like closet area. and it was so bad. It was such a small space, but it was perfectly functional for what it needed to be.
Yeah.
But you would be right here, and then you would turn around and the rest of the line would be out there. So the ovens were on this side and all of your supplies were on this side and the chef's right in front of you and the saute cook's right next to them. And I would watch Ellie flip pasta. And I was just enamored by how fucking cool she was. Like, I will say Ellie and I sort of had our own little falling out that I don't necessarily want to get into, but you know, she is one of the most inspirational people I've ever met, you know, and she definitely just, there is this aura about her when she's cooking that it just makes sense. You know what I mean? And I would look at her cooking on the line and I would just be like, that's what I want. That's the person I want to be. Yeah. You know, and then, you know, when she finally gave me a chance to go up on saute, she did it because she really believed in me and she really thought I could do it because I had proved myself. And I remember the first time I ever flipped a pan, I was just like, this is so cool.
I did it.
My God. And the funniest thing, because it, going up for that position when it became open, like I said, I had no experience. And Ellie asked me when I interviewed with her, she was like, well, do you have any experience? I was like, no, but I really want to. And she hired me just on that alone. Just on that alone.
The willingness then, to learn.
Yes. And it was between me another cook that worked at another one of our locations, and someone else that she had considered bringing in. And she tried each of us out on a night on the line in that position. And she picked me.
There you go.
I had already sort of, I had this idea in my head, like, okay, I hope I can nail this. But she asked me if I could flip a pan, and I was like, sure, I can do anything. You asked me to do it, I'll do it. And I had to learn on the fly and like observe and watch and figure it out pretty quick. Because that was the first time I'd ever done it, was the first night that she let me do it. And apparently I did well enough to get the job.
See, that right there though is such an awesome moment where, again, it's, we enter into such profound levels of just transformation of purely existing when we enter into that unknown and just kind of take those chances and just commit to it. So that's really, I don't know, that's really cool just to see the, like the transformation in the kitchen and just see how it gives you that one spark where it's like, yeah, let's rock, let's get it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the kitchen has given me an incredible amount of grit. I would say it's definitely put a lot of grit behind me, where I'm a much more of a pusher these days.
Well, that bringing it back to the kind of the overall physical impact of the kitchen life, how did that really, I mean, I guess you would say is in terms of like when you're seeing all these like health issues start coming up, when did it really set in that it was just like, oh, wow. Do you know certain moments where you're just like, ooh, I could see that causing a little tweak? Or is it just more like the repetitive?
You know, honestly, it did not, the thought had never occurred to me until I was in the hospital. So last month I had ruptured an ovarian cyst and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go to work tomorrow. Like I'm going to take a day off. I can rest. I can go to work tomorrow. And then I ruptured another one.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. That next day that I went to work and decided I was just going to go for it. And then I end up in the hospital again. And, you know, I realized like, oh, you know, something's really not right. And I had a hernia. I had an ulcer. I also already have severe endometriosis. And, you know, I ended up in this position that is like, what am I doing? Like, wow. Is it really good for me to be downing 6 cups of coffee in a day and like hoping for the best? Cause I'm 30 now and I have an ulcer. Maybe I need to slow this thing down.
Just a little bit, a little bit.
Whoa. A little bit. and I had to sit with that pretty hard. Actually. And, you know, when I came back, I had a meeting with my boss last week and I had come to terms with the thoughts that I was having. I was just like, you know, I don't think I can handle this anymore, you know? Which again, you know, I don't want to leave the industry. It's something I'm passionate about. It's something I love, but if it means sacrificing my entire body, maybe there needs to be a pivot point. So
even those types of introspections take, you know, it takes a lot of courage just to kind of push through those moments of, I won't even like to say, because a lot of people, you know, are going through these different types of transformations, changes, relationship things. And it's, you know, there's a lot of opportunity and, you know, just coming back to that and understanding that everything is grace. It really just gives everyone the recognition where it's like, okay, this is a, you can embrace the pivot, you could say.
Yeah. Yeah. Pivot points are always hard. Pivot points are always hard, but you know, I feel like if you have a strong sense of self, you can forge your path in the direction that's best for you. So, I mean, and I haven't listened to my body many times. That's why we're in the situation that we're in.
Oof. And with that, again, I just want to say thank you so much, Lauren, for coming on Creatives Chat.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure. I'm so glad that you invited me. I would love to do it again sometime. I loved it.
I love it. Well, we're going to have you stick around for the after show, but listeners, thank you for tuning in. Roll the outro.
That concludes this episode of Creatives Chat. Thank you for watching. Join us every Thursday at 3:33 p.m. Pacific Daily Time as creative minds get together and chat about who knows what. View more episodes on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks again to our sponsors for making this show possible. Thank you, We Are Historically, for your conscious human apparel. Shop online at wearehistorically.com.
Hi, I'm Darius Wilrich. I'll teach you everything you need to know about playing jazz piano like a pro with my 12-week online video course and downloadable guidebook, Jazz Piano Pro Essentials. Enroll today at jazzpianopro.com.
Thank you for joining us. Have a happy always.
The only reason that I've listened to my body at this point and pivoted is because I have not listened several times already.
Right. And I mean, at this point, it's forcing your hand. And I think that's always kind of the interesting aspect of life is how we get in these situations where it's just like, all right, are you finally going to listen? And if not, just kind of keeps cranking that heat.